Here.
Commissioner Markowski.
Here.
Commissioner Harris.
Thank you. Today on the agenda is one item. Objections. Seeing none, we are working off committee substitute House bill for House Bill Number 1. I would like to invite Representative Bryce up to talk about his committee substitute.
My name is Bonnie Carroll. I'm a staff member for Representative Bryce. He could not be with us this morning. He's out of town, but he asked me to thank the chairman and the committee for hearing his bill again. Representative Bryce supports the committee substitute. The changes that take place in the committee substitute are that it changes it from Class A1 employees to just police and fire employees. Today we have with us Mark Dragas of the Fairbanks Firefighters Association and Matt Soden of the Fairbanks Police Department Employees Association to testify and answer any questions you may have. Are there any questions for me at this time?
Is there any questions for seeing none? Thank you very much.
Thank you.
Before we go to local testimony, we have Ketchikan and Fairbanks online. Is there anybody in Ketchikan that would like to testify on House Bill Number 1? Share your online, please.
Hello? Can you hear me?
Yes, sir. For the record.
Okay, my name is Gavin Cherrier, and I'd just like to make a couple comments. Can you still hear me?
Yes, sir.
Okay. I'm a firefighter for the Ketchikan International Airport, and it's been a concern of mine for quite some time to get to binding or get to arbitration for the Class 1 people. Although we haven't been able to do that since our contract encompasses Class 1s, 2s, and 3s. My feeling is if it gets to the point where the employer and the employee cannot settle for wages and Class 1s don't have the opportunity to strike, then an arbitrator's decision should be that deciding factor. If it's the case where an arbitrator's decision isn't going to have any weight, then it's my feeling that the Class 1s and even the Class 2s should have the opportunity to strike. I mean, of course, clear across the United States, when a judge sets an award for any case, I mean, that's the law, and that's the way it should be in arbitration. And that's just my feelings on the situation.
Thank you for your testimony. Is there any questions, Mr. Chair? Seeing none, thank you very much. Next, we're going to go to Fairbanks. Mr. Jerry Cleworth, are you online, sir?
Yes, I am. Can you hear me?
Yes, sir. If you could state your name and affiliation for the record, please.
My name is Jerry Cleworth. I'm with the Fairbanks City Council and have been a council member for the last 11 years. I'd like to speak today in opposition to House Bill 1. I hope that you have all received a resolution from the Fairbanks City Council, which was a unanimous resolution in opposition. Have you received that?
Yes, sir, and the members have it in their packets.
Okay, thank you. I'd like to give you a little history of the predicament that we're in Fairbanks. I'm sure you're going to hear from one of our policemen and firemen later on, as the ladies testified earlier. I'd like you to know that there's a very strong other side to the story. Back in the early 1980s, the city of Fairbanks was flush with a lot of oil money, like a lot of communities in Alaska. There wasn't a lot of effort put into labor contracts. The city really didn't do their job in negotiating. And then the city joined into PARA, which at the time seemed pretty innocent enough. And as you know, the Class 1 employees, in exchange for the right not to strike, demanded binding arbitration. And again, that on the surface seems to be fine. But the position we found ourselves in was in the late 1980s when the oil money was running out. We were scrambling to try and make ends meet with a budget. And then the community of Fairbanks found out what the wages were and started to show a concern for local affairs. They became very upset with the wages for the Class 1 employees. They instituted upon us a tax cap. So the council was faced at that time with trying to regain some fiscal credibility and come up with a package that was more palatable, you know, for the taxpayers of our community. We negotiated with the Class 1 employees, but in those days, we really didn't have any tools to play with. We went to the negotiating table. We asked for reductions in some of the benefits, some of the wages, not all. The unions were taking the opposite point of view and saying, no, we would like to have cost of living increases. We would go to impasse. An arbitrator would come into town. And if you have any history with arbitrators, I have never known them to roll back anything. They usually come in, listen to both sides, up in cost of living, and then leave town. So we are stuck with paying whatever the arbitrator decides that we should pay. So the council then is in the predicament of figuring out, well, how do we pay for it? Because we have a tax cap over our head. We can't automatically raise taxes. So we looked at cutting staff in the police and fire department. The next move that the unions did was take us to court and demand minimum staffing levels, which they found a sympathetic judge to do. So now we have the judges telling us what the staffing should be, an arbitrator telling us what to pay, and the taxpayer is saying, you can't pay over X amount of bucks. The only thing left for us to do is to rob from other city departments to pay for our Class 1 employees. And that was not fair, and it created a lot of animosity within the city. We finally, a few years later, got a bit of a trump card, at least one card in our playing hand, that said that we did not have to fund an arbitrator's award. Now, this still doesn't give us a tool to roll back salaries and wages, but it did give us a tool to hold status quo. Let me give you an idea of what we're up against. In 1997, the average cost of a police department employee, this is average, including all the benefits that we pay out, is $95,053. In the fire department, it is $94,907. This is the highest we could find in the nation in the research that we have done. The average salary in the North Star Borough, which includes government, is only $29,196. The average base salary in the city of Fairbanks is $52,768. The benefits are extremely high, and as the two gentlemen will probably testify, we're working on trying to control medical costs now. It's to no one's advantage to have us pushing, you know, $900 to $1,000 a month on medical benefits. That is way higher than any government entity or any private entity. We would ask for this. We would hope that you defeat House Bill 1. We would hope that you give municipalities the right to get out of PARA. That in 1982, a council put us in, and we can't get out. And every city manager I have worked with, every mayor, has gone to Juneau asking for a change in the law to give municipalities the right to have their own personnel code and to get out of PARA. We should have that right. We also would ask that you would investigate the PERS system, and this is a killer for us, is that when the overtime is pumped in on base time to compute retirement pay, we really get hammered with Class 1 employees because there's a lot of overtime in those departments, and the contracts set up a situation for that overtime to be created that we don't have the tools to change. I would also ask that you would contact Legislator Jim Whitaker down there, who is a former city councilman, and he can give you a lot more detail if you have any questions regarding contracts and the situation that the Fairbanks City Council finds itself. That is about all I have to say right now. You heard at the last meeting, and I saw in the paper, that some of our firemen were only making $11, 12 bucks an hour. I want you to know that they did not tell you the rest of the story. the starting recruit is 1169. After 6 months, that's bumped to 1290. After 18 months, 1418, and on, there's step increases all through these contracts. Then they didn't tell you that longevity pay kicks in at the rate of 3% after 3 years and 1% every year after. And there's pro pay and on and on and on. So I hope you are not deceived by the numbers that you have heard. Thank you very much.
Thank you, Mr. Cleaworth. Any questions for Mr. Cleaworth? Mr. Cleaworth, I have a question for you. You stated in 1982 the Fairbanks City Council joint PARA. It's my understanding that there was a window of opportunity for cities to opt out of PARA. Do you remember when that was?
My understanding was that window was within a year or two of institution of PARA. The council at that time, which is essentially the same people, did not opt out. And we really didn't hit the wall until later on in the 1980s.
Okay. And a follow-up question, Mr. Cleaworth. When we first heard this bill on the 25th of February, we had some testimony from some members of the Fairbanks Police Department who stated that they have not had a pay increase in 6 years. Is that correct?
Well, they forget to tell you about the longevity, which is for people who are working at the city, after they work 3 years there, they get an automatic 3% and then 1% additional up to 10 years. The long-timers that have been there have been at the salary levels that they are at. But as I testified before you earlier, they're hardly poverty wages. They are, by any comparison that I have done, the highest that we can find really in the nation. They're not hurting.
Thank you for those comments. And another follow-up question. If you were able to opt out of PARA, would you still embrace binding arbitration for police and fire employees?
We have not had a problem. We use binding arbitration for Class 2 and Class 3 in the past. We have not had a problem there. But the council wants the option of whether to approve a contract or not. That's what we're elected to do. The only time that an arbitrator should be used is if both sides feel it's in their best interest to use that resource, one, to avoid a strike, or where there's differences that we cannot reconcile, but we want to reconcile them. But the council should have the right not to use an arbitrator. The union should have the right not to use an arbitrator.
Okay. I don't know if you answered my question, sir. Would you continue to offer binding arbitration to police and fire?
We would have our own personnel code. I think that we would offer them the right to strike. They should have the right to strike, and we should have the right not to use binding arbitration. We would go back to the personnel code that the city had in effect up until we joined PARA.
Thank you. Is there any questions for Mr. Cleaworth? Seeing none, we're going to move to Mr. Dave Maitland in Fairbanks. Mr. Maitland, could you please state your name and affiliation for the record?
David Maitland, police officer with the City of Fairbanks and a resident of the City of Fairbanks. I've been a police officer for the City of Fairbanks for 18 years. I'm here today to testify in favor of House Bill 1. Collective bargaining calls for us to negotiate good faith, mediate if we can't initially come to an agreement, and finally to arbitrate as a last resort. Mediator cannot resolve our deadlock. In the 18 years I've worked for the Fairbanks Police Department, our union has brought to contract arbitration on only 3 occasions. The arbitrator ruled in our favor on 2 of those occasions and ruled in the city's favor on 1 occasion. 2 rulings in our favor were over the issue of wages. First ruling in 1990 allowed for an essentially cost of living raise over a 2-year period after a wage freeze the first year. Prior to that, police union had given back 10% of their salary in the early 1980s to save layoffs. And in the mid-1980s, when the city came to us saying they didn't have the money for raises. Second ruling in 1995 was not funded by the city council. In this instance, the starting salary of the police officer was not increased. The two-year officer gained 4 cents an hour. The three-year officer gained 4 cents an hour. A four-year officer gained 48 cents an hour. And a five-year officer gained 9 cents an hour. Two pay steps were added to the top end of this contract, keeping salaries for starting officers low. It doesn't sound to me like a massive pay increase. Rulings in the city's favor allowed them not to incur additional costs, kept wages at the status quo, and again, not a massive pay increase. It should be noted that all provisions, except for the wage provision of the 1995 contract, had been tentatively agreed to by the city and the union. When the city failed to fund the arbitrated wage scale, the time and the money spent in the collective bargaining process was wasted. Police employees without a new contract, all because one provision was not funded. The substantive lawsuit cost even more. Tax cap. While the city of Fairbanks does in fact have a tax cap, the framers of that cap allowed six exceptions. One of those exceptions allows the city to raise taxes to fund court judgments and arbitrators' awards. No one wants to go to arbitration in a labor dispute. We like to resolve all of our issues through negotiation. But occasionally there'll be those issues where an impartial expert needs to hear all the facts and make a determination. As Class 1 employees, we're told that our services are essential, that we cannot strike, and that we have binding arbitration. By the city failing to fund a binding award, we obviously do not have truly binding arbitration. House Bill 1 would correct this. I ask that you please support this bill. Thank you.
Thank you. Any questions for Mr. Maitland? Thank you. We're going to go to local testimony. Is there anybody in the audience that would like to testify on this bill? Let's start with Matt Snowden.
I'll go ahead and pass and let Mr. Dragas testify.
Okay, you'll hear from Mark Dragas.
I'm Mark Dragas. I'm the business representative for the Fairbanks Firefighters Association. I'm also a captain in the Fairbanks Fire Department. I'm here to speak in favor of the bill. I spoke by teleconference last week in favor of the bill. I had intended to just make my statements rather brief and open up for questions, but I feel I need to respond to a couple things that Councilman Cleaver said. One thing is in the old days before before binding arbitration, and under the personnel code, where he says we would have the right to strike, in the late 70s, the firefighters did go on strike, just for a few days. There was a court injunction requiring us to come back to work. So it is, it's a tool the city, I'm sure, would use and to look out for the safety of the public. But that is why we have binding arbitration. So there isn't this interruption in the service. It's beneficial to the relations of the employees with the city. And it was intended to find a way to solve impasse in bargaining. And having binding arbitration just makes the parties want to agree to a contract. We don't want to go to binding arbitration. We'd like to come to an agreement. But it's a tool. It's out there. And it's something that brings finality to bargaining. Without true binding arbitration, there's no way to bring finality. And in our situation, I'd like to make this beyond just a Fairbanks issue, because it's going to affect other communities down the road. But in our situation right now, we've been negotiating for 3.5 years. Our contract expired in 95. We meet every Tuesday morning for the last 3.5 years, off and on. And we feel that the city, binding arbitration was true and binding on both parties. It would force good faith bargaining. We're in a situation where, under PARA, we do not have the right to strike, and I agree with that. I think it's good. I'd have a hard time striking. It's not fair. I mean, when you're in the business of saving lives and protecting property, you just don't want to see an interruption in that service. And so PARA, the wisdom of PARA called for binding arbitration. It is in there. By law, we have to subject to binding arbitration. And by law, we are subject to the arbitrator's decision. And if it affects us negatively, we have to abide by that decision. If the arbitrator were to say yes, indeed, and every argument Jerry Cleworth brought can be raised in arbitration, tax cap, the social economic view of the city, comparable wages, all these items can be brought about in arbitration. And if that we were to be negatively impacted, we would be bound by that. If an arbitrator ruled our wages were to be rolled back, if it were to be ruled that we did get too much annual leave, or whatever provision in the contract, we are bound by that decision. Whereas on the other side, the city is not bound by the decision. It's an option. It's subject to legislative approval. And that's not fair. We should be, both sides should be playing by the same set of rules. And that's what we're trying to do. This isn't something new. It's something that is in para. We're just trying to change it to where it is equal to both sides. And for years, it's always been understood, since the beginning of para, that binding arbitration, municipal employees, was true. It was binding on both parties. And I'll just use the word loophole was identified. And but prior to this, in the 25 so years that the Fairbanks Firefighters Association has been with contract with the city of Fairbanks, we've never had to go to binding arbitration. We've always been able to arrive at an agreement. And but we both sides knew that was out there. We felt, in dealing with the city and the council in the past, it was better to come up with a decision, whether it's good or bad, come up with an agreement between both parties was favorable to go into arbitration. And but it's a tool used in negotiations, and I would hope we wouldn't ever go to it. But knowing it's out there is what makes this process work. And without having it true and binding and equal on both sides, it isn't working. And with that, and I will mention, as mentioned, that the police haven't had an increase in pay in 6 years. I'm going to mention ours has been 9 years. And
Representative Dyson. Thank you. Thanks for coming in. Does your union get involved in local elections?
Yes.
And have they raised money and contributed to municipal candidates?
We have.
The council member said that the represented to us that the wages and benefit package for firemen was $90K. Was that accurate?
I'm not sure what figures he's using. We get different figures at different times. I will say this: he's also including overtime, which there again is, we've always contended, is subject to. There is a fair amount of overtime, but if we were staffed properly, that would much of that would go away. It also always includes benefits. And then on the other side, when they compare our wages, they just compare with salaries and don't include the benefits. But I'm not going to dispute those figures that much. I mean, it's ballpark, especially if you were to take the overtime benefits, that would be considerably less.
If I may continue.
Representative Jackson, please.
Do you know of, I used to be able to say that the Anchorage Police Department was the highest paid police department in the world.
Right.
I don't know if that's accurate or not anymore, but do you know of fire departments anywhere else that have a better package?
Well, I was looking at a recent survey showed Anchorage, which for a long time led the nation in fire, is now number four. I think San Jose is number one, and they've lost in rank, and we're below Anchorage. But bear in mind, these are all arguments that could be brought about in the arbitration proceedings.
Last question, if I may. I know in Anchorage, and I live on the fringes of that, we've never had problems attracting very, very qualified folks. I think the last vacancies in Anchorage had 800 applicants for eight or nine positions or something. Have you all had trouble attracting qualified folks in Fairbanks?
No, but we've found a problem recently in retaining them. We've been losing more employees than in the past, and currently in our fire department, we have at least six members. We're a 36-man department, and we have six members that are either on hiring lists or seeking employment elsewhere.
And just raise one last question. Are those people approaching the early retirement age?
No, we're talking in every instance there, we're talking people who have been there probably less than 6 years. And,
thank you. I just want thank you for being here today. I've read this bill, and I know we've heard it before, but I keep hearing people talking about the right to strike. I don't see that in this bill anywhere.
No. It's,
I just wanted your interpretation of it. Maybe I misinterpreted.
We're the only state like this, where Class 1 employees do not have the right to strike, and binding arbitrations are binding. In fact, I read a recent textbook on negotiations, and they listed us as a state that had binding arbitration. And I had to call the author and explain it to him. And I guess between the time he published the book and I called him, he had heard we're kind of this non-binding arbitration is something new, but it's something that goes side by side. The right to not having the right to strike and binding arbitration go hand in hand. I made reference to the strike. Mr. Cleworth indicated that he would prefer the city were under its own set of rules. And that if that was the case, the question that was asked twice by Mr. Hopper, that would the city have binding arbitration in there? And he dodged the question the first time. The second time he answered no, he would not be in favor of binding arbitration. He'd be in favor in allowing the employees the right to strike, which earlier we're going back some 25 years, they did have the right to strike. The firefighters did strike, and a court injunction got them back. Work, and I would. There's no doubt in my mind that that would happen again, and at the same time, I think it is very unfair to ask us to that we would be in a position of needing to go to strike. I mean, it would for even the state to make that decision. It would be a tough decision for me. It'd be very difficult.
Follow up, Mr. Chairman. Thank you. My interpretation of the bill, and correct me if I'm wrong, because I'm glad we have this kind of dialogue, but I know the right to strike isn't in there, and what we're doing is we're making binding arbitration really binding.
Right.
And that was my, and nothing to do with salaries, nothing to do with pay increases, no. Nothing to do with striking. What we're doing here is we're putting a tool back into the process that forces binding arbitration to be really binding.
Correct.
And when you go to the table to negotiate, both sides realize that if they can come to an agreement and there's an impasse, an arbitrator will make the decision for them, and both sides have to adhere to it.
Winner lose. That's right. And by law, we have binding arbitration, and by law, the bargaining units are bound by the arbitrator's decision. And because of the way the law is, the municipality is not bound.
And just one final question. So my interpretation would be then, if we can't make binding arbitration binding, then at least give us the right to strike.
Right, yes, but
not
I,
at that point yet, but we want
to
make.
Right, and
make
I think that would be unfair to the public and to us as public safety providers and emergency service providers to put us in that position, because I don't know if we can do it.
I see. Thank you, Mr. Chairman.
Any questions? I have a couple, Mr. Dragas. Mm-hmm. How long have you been with the Fairbanks Fire Department?
8 years.
8 years. Okay. And when the fire department went on strike before they were in para and the court forced them to go back to work, what was the reason for that?
It involved public safety. That was before my time. But in talking with people that were around back then, it was a public safety issue. I mean, it's...
So even before... The Fairbanks City Council joined PARA, the courts recognized that fire department is a life safety department, and you can't afford to have these guys walk in the picket line when your house is burned.
Exactly.
Let me ask you, how is an arbitrator chosen?
The process that we're under by our contract is we would write to the Federal Mediation and Conciliation Service. They send us a list of 7 registered arbitrators with a biography. We would do research, as the city would. We would talk to other bargaining units and try to find out about the different arbitrators. Then we flip a coin, and whoever loses the flip strikes first. You strike one name off the list, and then if we were the first to strike, we'd strike. City strike. We'd be down to 2 names. The city had the last strike. They strike a name, and that person left is the arbitrator. So you eliminate the 3 you want, and say so. It's a mutual process of arriving at an impartial person. And so, hopefully any of the seven would be appropriate, but you, even then you narrow it down to the one that that the parties can agree on.
And just kind of follow up, I think it's exactly what Representative Kukesh said, and I just want to echo what he said. I think this is part of a bigger picture. It's not so much, you know, what the police or fire make in X community. It's basically the overall premise of the law that you, you know, take away somebody's right to strike and you give them binding arbitration in place of that. The feeling is that that there should be some teeth to that. Thank you. Is Mr. Soden, did you want to comment?
I could only echo Mr. Greg.
Kevin Ritchie.
Good morning. Kevin Ritchie with the Alaska Municipal League, and thank you for the opportunity to testify and the time to discuss the issue with our legislative committee and others. We did have a meeting of the Educational Government Committee and discuss this issue at great length on March 5th, and the committee voted to oppose House Bill 1. And the primary reason is that we're really talking about two separate processes. One is labor negotiation. The other one is appropriation powers of a legislative body. And both on the on the state level as well as the local level, the law, really the history, the process has to stop somewhere, you know, as far as what the community is going to fund or not fund. The legislature right now in the supplemental bills that it's discussing is discussing whether or not to fund court judgments. So in a sense, that that power to appropriate is one very basic to the legislative process. And so they're not necessarily the same issue as has been discussed. The in a court case, which I think a binding arbitration is very similar to a judicial proceeding in a lot of ways in terms of making a decision that's binding. But all court decisions have an appeal process to higher courts. In this case, if you want to look at it as an appeal process, you've got the binding arbitrator's decision, which I think both sides, labor and management, would agree is not a perfect solution. You know, it's a solution that was chosen. There's an appeal, really, to the legislative body for, you know, for that decision. And then ultimately, the decision has to lie with the voters. And the voters, if they really feel their city council or their assembly or their legislature are making really bad decisions in regard to anything, that final appeal is generally a public issue which both sides have access to. So anyway, that's the basic reason that the Municipal League is against the bill as it's written. And Mr. Chairman, you did have a question on when the para window closed. My memory was 1976, because that was the first year I worked for the City and Borough of Juneau, and I was there to through the development of a labor ordinance for Juneau. And Juneau is a community that opted out of para, and through my time there as city manager, which was right at the beginning of the big economic downturn and ending in 1992, I think, we had what I would consider good relationships with our unions, including the police and fire, under the locally developed ordinance. And we and as a policy matter, the Alaska Municipal League does support allowing municipalities to opt out of para as they were allowed to in the 70s. And I don't know if there was another window, but I think the last window was in the 70s. And then the last thing is we have discussed with a number of folks a way potentially to decrease the number of times when it gets to a point where a city council has to feel that it must not appropriate a decision, part of a decision of a labor arbitrator or whatever, by doing things to improve the process. Talking to the Attorney General's office and my memory of the process is I believe the state of Alaska does not have a strong set of standards for what labor arbitrators do. As Mr. Dreyfus testified, the federal agency sends names in and then you try to get the best person out of the seven names, but they're not there's not a state statute or set of standards that says the types of things that arbitrator has to consider. Certainly local financial conditions would be one of those things. Budget issues and tax issues are obviously very important to the public. So potentially working with that between both the state, municipal governments, and labor organizations to try and strengthen the wording in that statute might be a good thing. Anyway, with that, I want to thank you very much for your time.
Is there any questions for Mr. Ritchie? Representative Pugin.
Thank you. I appreciate you coming down here today. I guess I'm not surprised that you would come down on a position that you've come down. Obviously, your job is to support what the municipalities want, which is an entirely, I mean, if we had somebody who represented the unions or the police departments or the fire departments, I'd expect them to come down a little bit different. So I guess I expected you to say that, but I do have a question specifically. Do you believe that in Alaska that binding arbitration is binding right now?
No.
And how do we fix it?
Okay. Again, just going back to the two separate processes, when you say binding arbitration, you know, obviously it's you're trying to arrive at a goal. When you go to a court, through the chair, I'm sorry, when you go to the court, you expect that decision to be binding, but there are appeal processes. I guess my testimony is that probably very few things are ultimately binding in the sense that you've always got an appeal process or a decision process. So in the case of binding arbitration, it is important to come to finality. However, that runs into conflict with potentially the constitutional duty and certainly the practical duty of an assembly or a council to be the place where the buck stops in terms of services and taxes and other processes. So in that sense, that was why I said yes.
Just follow up. I really believe that binding arbitration should be binding, and if you don't have a solution, then the solution that we're asking or looking at today is the one that's before us. And I guess I'm a little uncomfortable with trying to compare this to a court case where there's appeal process, because we all know that there's a Supreme Court in the state and there's a Supreme Court in the United States where everything somehow comes to a final appeal. And that's why it's called binding arbitration. And if you don't have binding arbitration that's truly binding, you know, I'd be more comfortable if the Municipal League would come to us and say, we know there's a problem on here, and here's the problem, and we recognize that there's a problem, but here's how we fix it. You know, coming out and just saying we oppose it doesn't help us, because the only thing really before us today as a legislative body is this bill. Thank you.
Any questions? Mr. Ritchie, you had mentioned your time served with Juneau, the city government. When they opted out of PARA, did they give fire and police the right to strike?
I'm going to have to pass. I apologize. I don't recall. I believe not, but it's been quite a long time since I've gone through the process. I do know that there hasn't been a binding arbitration that I know of in the city and borough of Juneau.
And with PARA, if you could help me with a little bit of the history of PARA, did every community have the opportunity to join and then during that window have the opportunity to get out? I mean, it's not something the state imposed, for instance, like the senior citizens property tax exemption. I mean, we simply offered the PARA program to communities and they joined with their own free will.
Mr. Chairman, my recollection is that it was you were in PARA unless you took the action to opt out.
In your letter, Mr. Ritchie, you had raised some constitutional question about the ability to tax out. There's several sections that maybe vaguely touch on it. Section 9, local debts. Section 1, taxing power. Have you had any kind of a legal opinion on these?
I did talk with the Attorney General's office, and they indicated that in a couple of issues which did go to court, one of which I think is the Fairbanks issue and another was a police fire issue in Anchorage, and that those questions were raised during the suits, but the court didn't rule on those. They decided the issue before they got to those, which is something courts sometimes do. So the courts didn't say absolutely not or absolutely yes. They didn't. They call it not reaching those decisions. So I think the Attorney General's office said that it was certainly an issue that could be decided.
In the one of the concerns that I have is something Mr. Cleaver answered the second time when I repeated my question about would they endorse finding our that they were able to opt out of PARA, that they would come up with their own rules, and you know, not only as a lawmaker, but as a citizen, that concerns me because, of course, we all realize how important police and fire is. But, you know, the whole concept of binding arbitration is that in exchange for you giving up your right to strike and walk a picket line to protest whatever contract agreement you're protesting, you know, we are going to sit down with a third party and mediate a resolution to the best of our ability, taking into consideration, you know, local community's economy, you know, whether it's, you know, going out and doing pay analyzations. I mean, how do the firefighters in XYZ community compare to ABC community? So I just, you know, this does create some heartburn with me because, you know, these are people, police and fire, that we're expecting every day to go out and protect us. And, I mean, let's be honest, just like the court ruled 20 years ago in Fairbanks, if you can't have firefighters walking a picket line, what are you going to do if your house catches on fire? And I understand the economic concerns of your colleagues in the Municipal League, but, you know, I mean, there was a window to opt out of PARA, and there has been, you know, there definitely has been a length of time, at least 6 years since the Fairbanks Police Department got into this, that we could have addressed this in court. And, I mean, I just kind of want to get some feedback on you. Why is it taking so long to kind of get to this point?
Mr. I don't know about the time frames. As the council member from Fairbanks testified, the time to opt out of PARA was a time maybe when conditions were much different, and if that opportunity were to present itself again, you might see a number of communities take the initiative to create a local ordinance. In effect, this is a local problem. You know, it's a problem that legislative bodies and communities are designed to handle, as to how do you weigh those really important decisions as to what do we pay employees versus what can taxpayers afford and what do taxpayers want and levels of service. So all I can say is a gut-wrenching decision that is made community by community. In a case where to fund a contract, you'd have to decrease service, for example, which happens sometimes when you have a tax cap. Obviously, both of those are terrible decisions.
Representative Dice.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. I was going to respond to your question, Mr. Chairman, or... and if you want, we can wait till Mr. Ritchie is done.
Okay, that would be fine. Is there any other questions for Mr. Ritchie?
Thank you.
Is there anybody else in the gallery that would like to testify? Sir, please come forward and state your name and affiliation for the record.
I'm Don Etheridge. Work for the District Council of Laborers. Also do the lobbying, much of it for the AFL-CIO. Recently, we just finished up our conference. Representative Porter spoke very highly of this bill, and that got a standing ovation from our group from it, just to give you an idea where we're coming from here. Some of the questions on arbitrations and the rights of that, many of the areas of arbitration are negotiable also. They can set up rules of what the arbitrator has to follow in negotiations that limits their powers to what they can do and what they cannot react to. So this also has to be considered into some of the decision on that. Juneau Fire Department, they don't have the right to strike. I don't recall them ever having to go to binding arbitration either. We've never had an issue come before the City Personnel Board over this either. I hear a lot of comments on, if my house is on fire, I want firemen there. Well, I agree with that. But if you also, you're looking at these guys that go out there, if you're mangled up and in a car wreck, these are also the guys that stop the bleeding and pull you out of that. If somebody's banging on your door with a gun or wanting to harm you, these are also the people we're talking about, the ones who's going to come and put their lives on the line to protect you. And I believe that everybody in the communities think they ought to be treated fairly. I thank you for the opportunity to testify.
Any questions for Mr. Evans? Is there anybody else online that would like to give testimony on House Bill 1? Seeing none, the chair is going to close public testimony on House Bill 1. Is there discussion, Representative Rice?
Thank you. What's your intention with this bill today, Mr. Chairman?
The next committee of referral is Labor and Commerce, and I would like to move it out of the committee. And I'm sure Representative Roethlisberger, as chair of Labor and Commerce, will amend it. I have no doubt about that. I would like to move this along.
All right, thank you. I'll call you all your attention to a letter from the Tim Rogers, municipality of Anchorage. I spent 6 years on municipal assembly in Anchorage and local government and dealing with the related issues, and although Anchorage is not directly affected because they opted out. And there's some hidden issues here. Binding arbitration is a politician's dream because it gets a politician out of the position of having to make the hard decisions. And politicians love that because they can always say, well, don't blame me, the arbitrator did it. And it does provide the resolution. Push got to shove here, Mr. Chairman, on these kind of issues when it all of a sudden the arbitrator's decisions and the following court decisions took away some of the local legislative body's ability to make decisions about taxing and appropriation. That's when the local governments started really waking up to what they'd gotten themselves into. Anchorage, where I have the privilege of living on the edge of, has a long-standing love affair with their police and fire. And I would argue that we not only have amongst the highest paid in the world, but the highest quality. We have had no cases in Anchorage I know of, virtually, of police brutality or cops on the take. Our fire or people are very well cross-trained in all kinds of medical emergencies and so on. It saved a lot of lives. They don't want the ability to strike. They don't want the ability to strike because they don't want, think of a polite term, they don't want to mess up the love affair they have with the citizens of Anchorage. So what we're being asked to do with this bill is take away the legislative body's authority to make the appropriations amongst the several services the city provided. They started to balk. We have the additional situation where in our city, where the overtime is assigned on the basis of seniority, the highest paid employees in the state, in the city, and probably nearly in the state, are the senior officers who get first cut at all of the overtime, which then feeds into their retirement rates, and it's 20 years and out, and it's the retirement benefits that accumulate. So we're being asked here in this bill, and I am not only not going to vote in favor of moving it out of here, I'm going to strenuously argue against it because what it does to the constitutional responsibilities of the elected representatives. When the arbitrator sits down with the parties, there's somebody missing at the table. The employees are represented and the administration is misrepresented. Who is not there is the people of that area, the people whose money funds it. And there's no accountability loop between the arbitrator who gets in the airplane, goes back to his hotel room, and then gets in the airplane and goes somewhere else. There's nowhere there that he's held to accountability to face the people whose tax pocketbooks he's affecting and whose lives and services he's affecting. Accountability is not there, and a fundamental principle of our government is abrogated because there is very close to being certainly appropriation without representation, and arguably under some court decisions close to being taxation without representation. So, and the system does work. We do not have, at least in Fairbanks and Anchorage, firefighters and cops, policemen who are getting welfare. You know, 20 years ago, 25 years ago, we did in Anchorage. We had police who were qualified for food stamps, and due to the efforts of the union, that was rectified. But we do not have them being underpaid, and the rate at which we get applications for those positions shows that the remuneration package appears to be attractive. So I would encourage you all to not take away this constitutional power of the local bodies to make appropriations amongst the several city local government services as they choose. Thank you.
Representative Dyson, you, Chair, has a question for you. I understand your point about finding arbitration being a politician's dream and being able to take the responsibility and put it on somebody that flies in for the weekend or the week. But the people elect the politicians. And so, you know, through history, I know in our community in Anchorage, I mean, we've had to live with a lot of bad decisions that prior administrations have made. I mean, I'll direct your attention to the Performing Arts Center, and we all know who was mayor when that thing was built. But the fact is, you know, then why do we have binding arbitration? I mean, why does it even exist? I mean, we have a group of people who are essential to the life and safety of a community. And, you know, I could sit here today and argue against this bill, but, you know what, sure as the sun will rise tomorrow, if my house catches on fire, I'm going to want those guys here and want them here now. And so I guess my question is then you know, why is there binding arbitration? Why do we have them give up their right to strike in order to put the decision in a third party?
Yeah, thank you, Mr. Chairman. I'm struggling here because I think I answered that question, and I think Mr. Ritchie did as well. It was a part of the original deal, if you give and take, if you give up the right to strike, which I believe most responsible firemen and police do not want, you get arbitration. You know, that was the deal that was cut. Everybody liked it. Subsequent tactics, strategies, and financial conditions exposed weaknesses in that system, plus the court decisions that said, you know, Fairbanks and Anchorage face it also under the tax cap. When you have greatly diminishing or significantly diminishing income due to a recession and a tax cap, then the money goes down and you have to live by the arbitrator's decision and you do not have the option of reducing the number of employees. Therefore, you've taken away a portion of the local legislative body's authority and responsibility to make appropriations. So then you're going to take the money away from something else. And so that's when people started having significant reservations about a system. Looked really good when tax caps, recessions, and tactics exposed differences, then people started having reservations about it. So my guess is, Mr. Chairman, that people have learned as they've worked the process. I remind you that the public employees have been very active in local elections and have as good and in most cases better opportunity than many people in the city to put their case before the people and elect people to the local assemblies who are very sympathetic to having the decisions made by someone from somewhere else who's not accountable.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. I think we get a little bit sidetracked on other issues. You know, the question isn't on salaries and people, cops being on welfare or firemen being on welfare. The issue is really this. We give the people in those classes the right to strike or give them a right to arbitration. And that's the only options we have right now. And I think that we've discussed this bill to the point of remembering that there's nothing in here on the right to strike. All we're doing is putting binding arbitration back into the process where it's binding arbitration. Not talking about salaries, not talking about municipal rights, or taking away municipal rights or recognizing municipal rights or ignoring municipal rights. It's putting teeth back into the binding arbitration process. And I think that Labor and Commerce, the next committee referral, will probably have a more in-depth review of this, and I think that it ought to move on to the next committee. We've given it 2 days of this committee, and I think that the question of binding arbitration and the question of the right to strike are two issues that we've explored very deeply here. I think that I'm in favor of this bill because I think, personally, that it gives binding arbitration some teeth. And I think that's what it's been lacking. And that's why we have a problem.
Oh. Seeing none, what is the wish of the body?
Mr. Chairman, I move House Bill 1 to the next committee of referral with attached fiscal notes and individual recommendations.
Any objection?
Roll call.
Let's do a roll call vote.
Representative Joe. Representative Kokesh.
Yes.
Representative Morgan.
Yes.
Representative Markowski. Representative Dyson.
No.
Yes.
Mr. Chairman Harris.
Just a clarification, Representative Kokesh, if you will move the committee, let me just clarify that to move the committee substitute.
Oh, yes, I'm sorry. You're right. It was a committee substitute.
There are no other matters before the Community and Regional Affairs. We will stand adjourned at 9:03.